We still hold to an idea in this country that business conducted on behalf of the public should be conducted in the sight of the public. So the workings of government at all levels are subject to scrutiny by the public. At least that's the theory. In practice, it can take many requests before public records are released to members of the public. An Oregon State University employee who advises student media requested records from OSU on campus crime and employee compensation and got some flack back from administrators for asking for such records from her employer. Kate Wilson feared for her job, but apparently still has it. The case raised questions about who gets what when it comes to public records requests. Stephen M. Wilker is a media law attorney with Tonkin Torp in Portland and well-versed in public records and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Just to be clear, you are not representing Kate Wilson or otherwise directly involved with the case. Is that right?
I am not.
All right. When, from your understanding, though, I mean, what happened with her? I mean, she did ultimately get both the requests and get to keep her job?
Well, I think I don't know that we know what's happened quite yet. From what I understand, and my understanding is largely from the news story, but she made the request. The request was declined, and she was essentially called on the carpet by the university for having made the request in her capacity as a university employee. The university essentially told her, you can't do that. And then after the fact, others joined in the request. I don't know whether or not the requests have been fully honored, but the university's position was that an employee of the university on behalf of the university, ask for public records because the university, as an entity, was not entitled to seek access to public records under the Oregon Public Records Law.
So this was identifying the university as an individual for the purpose of making the public records request?
That was the university's position. The university's position was the university is not among the people or persons identified as qualified to seek access to public records, and that when Kate Wilson acted as an employee of the university in making her request, she was essentially acting on behalf of the university, and since the university doesn't have the right, she didn't have the right in that capacity. A very technical reading of the law, in my view.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, you're going to have a few people going, what? Now, wait a minute. So she could request these, apparently, from the university's perspective as a private citizen, but not as a university employee?
Correct. That appears to be their approach, that Kate Wilson, private individual, had the right to seek these documents. Kate Wilson, employee, in her role as employee, did not.
Huh. Okay. In the years you've been doing public records law, has anything ever sounded quite like this?
Oh, you know, I wouldn't want to say this is the most outrageous assertion by a governmental entity. This is an argument only, as I told the reporter at the Corvallis Gazette Times. This is an argument only a lawyer could love. There is a tremendous amount of litigation. Well, maybe not a tremendous. There's been a substantial amount of litigation over the years regarding the Public Records Act, and some of it makes it to the courts, and some of it gets resolved administratively. But these kinds of arguments are not really all that unusual. A technical argument that the law somehow doesn't reach this requester or this kind of document or this kind of public agency.
So, all right, so let's come back a little closer to square one here. What are some of the most frequent requests that you're aware of being made for public records? I mean, who often are the people most often doing the requesting, and what are they asking for?
Well, I think the two primary requesters you see are members of the media, journalists, people who are working on stories and or books, and you see a fair number of claims by what I'd call citizen activists. Folks who are self-styled grassroots activists who are looking for information in order to pursue their particular interest and try and get government data to either support or debunk their particular theory of an event. You do see public records requests for employment compensation for public officials and public employees. You see that sometimes in the context of union negotiations with the public employers. There are a variety of areas where you might see a public records request. In some cases, businesses seek public records in order to obtain information that they think might be useful, either competitively or in order to obtain the ability to contract with the government. So there are a variety of reasons why someone would want public records. I think the most common, I think, is the public interest watchdog, either individual or group, or the media.
And does it make a difference in who is making the request, whether it's an organization or an individual? I mean, does who you are make any difference in what you can request or expect to get through your request?
No. As a matter of law, it does not. There are circumstances in which the court can, a court or an administrator can look at the purpose of the request in order to potentially determine whether or not a fee waiver is in the public interest. But the identity of the requester is not and should not be relevant in terms of whether you get access to the information that's been requested.
And so how, I mean, granted, I've been in the news business for better than 30 years now, and I've seen a fair number of requests denied. I mean, is there any particular percentage that hangs in your mind of requests made and allowed versus requests denied?
You know, I don't know that there's any statistical statistics that have been done to determine that issue. I'm not aware of any. I think what you hear about are the requests that are denied and that result in either an administrative appeal. And under our system, you have an appeal either to the if it's a local agency, you appeal to the county to the district attorney for the county in which the records are maintained. If it's a state agency, you appeal petition for review is to the attorney general, which is an oddity in and of itself because you're asking what tends to be a prosecuting attorney or a member of the executive to make a determination of in a quasi-judicial manner,
acting like a judge when they're really not in a judging position.
Right. It's an administrative step. Now, if you're dissatisfied with their decision or if the public agency is dissatisfied with their decision, there is an opportunity to go to circuit court and contest it further and ask a circuit judge, one of our regular trial judges throughout the state, to make the determination. Now, as a general matter, I think you described it well at the front end of your introduction, which is the notion is transparency in government. The government works for us. We have a right as individuals, as citizens, to have some public transparency on that work. And these laws developed primarily in the late 60s and into the 70s in an effort to create sunshine on what government was doing. And since these laws were put into effect, there's been an incremental effort to cut them back. There are more and more exemptions, more and more exceptions to what's a public record. There are some very highly specialized ones. If you look at the list of exemptions, you can see that this is designed. A particular exemption might be designed for one particular kind of issue, and that's become more and more common. The general presumption is still in favor of disclosure, and so you have to establish that. If you wanted the benefit of an exemption, you have to establish that it applies. And the burden is supposedly always on the government to sustain a refusal to disclose documents, a refusal to disclose public information.
We're talking about public records and public records law with Stephen M. Wilker, who's a media law attorney with Tonkin Torp in Portland. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about what is and is not available and how you go about requesting it. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. You've already gone to this issue of exemptions that seem to crop up in public records laws over the years. It seems like also every legislative session, somebody says, well, let's prune back some of these exemptions. To your knowledge, has there been much pruning?
There hasn't been. Our prior attorney general, John Kroger, while he left early, one of his initiatives was to clean up the public records law and to create a more transparent process. And that initiative essentially went nowhere in the legislature. So what we have seen and continue to see is that there are exemptions. Most of the exemptions, when you look at the exemptions, most of the exemptions you can say, oh, I can see why they did that. Some of them you kind of scratch your head. But most of them are designed to protect personal privacy or public safety. There are some other individual exemptions, like you're not entitled to records of the attorney-client discussions between a public agency and its outside counsel. But there are limits on that, and you want to make sure you don't allow people to protect or allow agencies to protect all of their deliberations on issues of public policy by the attorney-client privilege or by what we call a deliberative process privilege, so that once a decision is made, you can get access to those documents. But I don't think there's been any substantial pruning in the last several years. I don't think we're seeing quite the explosive rate of growth in exemptions in the last few sessions as we had seen maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
It seems like what happens is you get what you talked about, this idea that, wow, this specific bit of information really shouldn't be out there before the public. And so everybody makes a great case for their one exemption, and before you realize, you got a whole bunch of exemptions.
Yeah, there are if you counted them up, I think there are more than 60 separate exemptions from the public records law. And that's just within the context of the public records law. There are actually a number of exemptions and limitations on disclosure sprinkled throughout the Oregon statutes. And so you can't just limit yourself to looking at the actual public records law, because the public records law imports every other exemption that applies as a matter of law. So oftentimes you'll see an exemption or limitation on a disclosure obligation that's contained in a different set of statutes completely. And it's so there in reality there are probably closer to 75 or 80 exemptions that are potentially applicable and potentially more.
Let us take a call. We have Chris in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Stephen Wilker. We're talking about public records law.
Good morning, Jeff.
Hi.
Basically, I'd like to sort of tell the public about an experience that I had that actually resulted in a change that Stephen may be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
The Housing Authority of Jackson County was in the process of building a development in Medford, and as a part of that, we wanted to obtain the land appraisal because we had some concern about the price that was paid, and discovered that appraisals for quasi-public, quasi-governmental agencies like the Housing Authority were not available to the public, even though the Housing Authority exists solely because of taxpayer dollars. And we never were able to obtain that land appraisal. But Sal Esquivel became involved with us,
mm-hmm.
and he took that issue to the state legislature and managed to get that law changed, so that we are able to know exactly where our government dollars are being spent.
All right. State House member from Medford, Sal Esquivel. Thanks for the story, Chris. And is this a fairly common sort of thing, Stephen Wilker?
I think the change that you've described is one that applies in the looking retrospectively, looking backwards. Typically, you're not entitled to that piece of information, the appraisal data, while the county or the housing authority or the city is in negotiations for the acquisition of the property. But once the transaction's been concluded, there's no longer any justification for keeping that appraisal from the public.
Oh, because where it could have been an advantage in negotiations or something before, it is no longer part of negotiations, therefore...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Once you had a completed transaction, the justification for maintaining the secrecy on that appraisal disappears. You can make a good case that you should not disadvantage the public in its negotiations while those negotiations are ongoing.
Back to the issue of whether it makes a difference who you are when you ask for records, I'm reminded of an interview a couple of years ago with Alan Huffman, who was the co-writer of a book called We're With Nobody. And it was about doing opposition research and just trying to dig up public records in little counties all over the South in particular. And the title of the book was the response to the question, who are you with? Because people always wanted to know which news organization or which political party or whatever. And their answer was always, I'm with nobody.
Right. And there are different rules, state and federal. So under federal law, in fact, it shouldn't matter at all who you're with, although again there is a potential element for looking at the nature of the purpose of the disclosure, not for determining whether or not you're entitled to inspect public records, but in fact to determine whether or not you may be entitled to a fee waiver, because there is a fee waiver provision for folks who are looking for documents for wide public dissemination or in the public interest, that a commercial user who has the same entitlement to the records wouldn't have.
So, in other words, if you're from a news organization, which in theory is a commercial venture, although less so as the days go by, it seems, you'd likely pay, but a member of the public working just to put this out in front of lots of people would not?
Well, I would put it differently. Typically, a news media might not get the same benefit as, say, a public interest organization, but a competitive business, someone who seeks to do business with the government from the information with the information it obtains. People used to do public records quite commonly, records requests quite commonly, to get lists of potential customers. I want a list of all the BLM leases for Southern Oregon. And that would potentially give you a potential source of business. Now, if you were a newspaper organization who's doing that in order to determine whether there are sweetheart deals in those leases, that's a different issue than if you're looking to sell the lessees something. And so, if you're the person who's doing it for purely commercial interest, you're unlikely to qualify for any sort of fee waiver. You're going to have to pay for the records if you're otherwise entitled to them, and if they're not otherwise exempt. If you're a media member who's looking to disseminate information to the public, you might well have a claim for a fee waiver in that circumstance. And if you were a nonprofit watchdog group, you'd have an even greater chance, in all likelihood, of obtaining a fee waiver.
We could probably spend a whole lot more time talking about public records and how to go about requesting them. Maybe if you're available on Sunshine Week in March, we'll have you back to talk about public records. Stephen Wilker from the media, from the Portland law firm of Tonkin Torp, where he's a media law attorney. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
You bet. That'll do it for this Hour of the Exchange. Coming up in hour number two, we'll talk to science journalist Dan Hurley about whether we actually can push our brains to make us smarter than perhaps we already are. That's next on the Jefferson Exchange after the top of the hour.